Hi, I'm Norm Shealy.
NormShealy.com.
You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Hi, this is Eva Herr, and thanks for taking the time out of your schedule to be with us tonight. Tonight we're going to do the second half of the interview with Don Estes on his new portal technology. We're going to talk about tonight the things that, how it intricately works and how you can use it in your daily practice and what all of these things on the screen means. I wish you could see it with us, but if not, go to theportal.com and just educate yourself about it and then get yourself a copy and then come back and listen to this radio show when you can use it. So welcome, Don. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure. It was great last week. It was really fun.
Thank you. So before we get started, why don't you tell people just a little bit about you, just for anybody who missed last week, and where they can find you and find information on this technology. And the technology, give us the name of the technology and just tell us a little bit about it.
Okay, sure. I'm the director, founding director of InnerSense Incorporated, which has now been actually pulled together with another company called Sciometrics, and we've created a brand new company called Sciometric Science Incorporated. We've been around since the mid-80s, basically, when we first incorporated, designing and developing transformational technologies that we've been spreading out around the world. And a lot of your readers, especially there close by to you in Atlanta, would know that I actually got my start there in Atlanta. We have a lot of our vibrasound systems out that were quantum biofeedback, or basically biofeedback kind of platforms that allowed a person to see, feel, and hear a piece of music or a particular sound or frequency all at the same time. But recently we've been moving into how to personalize that experience. So we've developed some new technologies. One that you mentioned is the portal, which is a quantum biofeedback technology that a person can basically breathe or speak or tone or sing or and somehow express themselves into it, and it allows them to see what that looks like and what that sounds like in its quantum state at the most basic primary level of reality. And as the word implies, portal, it kind of implies that it's a portal through to the other side in that inner world where intention originates and creates everything, but also somewhat of an oracle to help you navigate yourself around in that space. So there have been other technologies that have come out of that as well, dealing with sound and sound enhancement and visual enhancement and that sort of thing. But our main technology that we're talking about tonight is the portal, which is this way of looking at yourself at the most basic primary level of reality and being able to see your true inner radiance and hear your true inner voice and have a way of affecting change on all of that.
And where can we find this?
There is a website at www.theportal, which is the word the, T-H-E, and then portal, which is P-O-R-T-A-C-L-E, kind of like portal and oracle at the same time, portal. So www.theportal.com.
Okay. So I'm looking at the one that I have on my computer right now. And I want to go through each one of these things. And there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 screens. One looks like kind of real-time. Then there's lots of real-time numbers, that real-time displays that run. But I want to talk about each one of these screens. And if I understand it correctly, you're telling me that these screens represent what we would call the field or the irreducible unit. Does that make sense?
Yes. As we talked about last week, our technology revolves around what we call automata, which are the smallest, most indivisible building blocks of reality. These are the building blocks that basically create all geometry, as we talked about last week. And so basically, the easiest way to understand the portal is to start in the top left uphand upper corner. On one of the images there, that's called the temporal chromophase portal. And basically what that image is it is a real-time drawing of the relationships between these two different kinds of automata. And you remember last week we talked about these automata come in two flavors. They come in what's called real and imaginary. But an easier way to look at that is just to call them the player and the instrument. At the most basic level of reality, a human being is an instrument, a machine, but they're also the operator of the machine or the player of the instrument. And these two factors, real and imaginary automata, those code for what the potential of those two things are, the potential of the player and the potential of the instrument. And so when a person speaks, we are just taking those that statement, that complex wave, and we're breaking it down into these real and imaginary automata, and then we're plotting them on this portal screen, where the horizontal plane is the real plane and the vertical plane is the imaginary plane.
Okay, so let me just ask you a question here.
Okay.
Two questions, actually. The player, the real and the player. One of those is the human or the living things. Which one is that?
Well, in a human being, we have both of those things. We have this instrument that we walk around in, but we're the player of it. We have we drive around in this vehicle we call our body, but we're the driver of the vehicle. So at the most basic level, we have an impersonal aspect of ourselves that's just a material, impersonal aspect, but we also have this personal aspect that gets to operate or drive or control or play.
So which one would be pure consciousness? And another word for God?
Well, it's almost hard to pull them apart. At some level, the impersonal and the personal are unified together. If you wanted to pull them apart, you would have to really come up with a third position.
Big mind and little mind. Which one would represent big mind? Which one would represent? Can you separate them that way? Big mind, little mind. It's hard. I want to give people.
Well, I would.
To grasp,
if we were
going to
do it that way, what we would do is we would take mind and we would pull it out away from those other two, and we would say that mind is the associative element that resolves the difference between the other two. So it's kind of like, you remember the old cartoons when we were kids, and any situation that came up for one of the characters where they had to make a choice, a little devil would show up on one shoulder and a little angel would show up on the other shoulder. And that's sort of how it is. We have this animal side of ourself and we have this spiritual side of ourself. And every decision we make, both of those start telling us what we should do. And we're really neither one of those things. We are that mind that is sandwiched in between those two, or basically out looking at both of them at the same time and able to associate those two things together. And we have to make a choice. Do we choose what the animal's saying, or do we just choose what the spirit's saying, or do we mix them together and come up with a resolving solution that brings them and associates them together to where they're both happy?
Okay, so let's go back and start back at number one and finish. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Well, no problem. That portal screen that you're looking at there in the upper left-hand corner, that's where we're just plotting out the time domain relationships between these two components. And there, as you're sitting there speaking into it, you're seeing that it's drawing those in real time. It's changing as you speak into it.
Uh-huh.
And but we know that that's really just a time domain version of what we're looking at. That's what it looks like on this side of the quantum veil when we really want to look at it. I guess the best way to explain this or to describe it would be, have you ever seen how how the scientists look at a crystal by taking it and zapping it with an X-ray and looking at how the light scatters off of it? Are you familiar with that? They call it crystallography, and that's how they actually know how the atoms are spaced inside. That's how they know what the quantum field looks like inside of a crystal, because they blast it with some kind of X-ray or cosmic ray, And then they put a screen on the other side, and they can see clearly where the little particles are because they diffract all the light off. So this is sort of the same thing, only in reverse, to where what we really want to do is, instead of seeing what the crystal looks like, we want to see what the atomic structure is on the inside. What does the quantum field look like inside of it? And right now, with this top left-hand corner one we're looking at, we're really just looking at the outside of the crystal there.
So what makes the little light in the middle get brighter or bigger or smaller? Because sometimes it gets huge, like a big floodlight, and sometimes it's very small.
If you just watch it right now as you're speaking, it should be, if your settings are right, it should be actually following exactly your voice. So if you get loud, it gets really bright. And if you're just barely speaking, it's not so bright. So it should be following your voice in real time, and you should be able to watch yourself speak right on it.
Okay.
If that's not happening, if it's following some other random source of information, then perhaps one of the settings is wrong. If you want to check that really fast, I can tell you how to do it.
Okay, and that would help for other people that listen down the road. Why don't we check
it? Sure, so hold the shift button down, and at the same time, press and hold down the little squiggly button that's next to the one key.
Okay.
And a little audio panel pops up.
Uh-huh.
And audio should say on.
Uh-huh.
And driver should say add port audio, core audio.
Uh-huh, MME.
You're on a Windows?
Yes.
Okay, yes, it should say MME.
Uh-huh.
And then the input, what does your input say?
Microphone Logitech.
And is that the microphone that you're using now?
Yes.
Are you using your built-in microphone?
I'm using this Logitech.
Okay.
Sometimes I use one that's, one of those professional ones that you plug in has really good sound. Would it select it automatically by itself?
No, you would have to pull up this little panel and go in there and see it. You actually have to plug it in first and then open up the portable, and then it will see it.
Okay.
And then you have to tell it which input device that you want. But if you're on the microphone that you're using now, you should see some correlation between your speaking and what's happening on that screen. If you were to stop speaking, you should see that more or less kind of wane away.
Okay, I do now.
Okay,
so what you're talking about.
Okay, so now you can close that little audio status panel. So just to follow on with the train of thought about what's happening here is that once we have that plotted out, we really want to be able to hold on to that for a minute, because if we were to try to really read what's going on there, you can see it's changing so fast that you can't really get your mind wrapped around it. So we've built in an accumulator, which is that next one over to the right. If you point at that, it says that it's the temporal chromophase accumulator. And basically what that's doing is it's just holding on to what's happening in the first one for a little period of time, maybe 5 to 10 seconds worth of time, where it really has a good hold on it. That's why when you speak into it and you listen to some of the return back, you hear it accumulating that and feeding it back to you what you just said, and it kind of sounds a little bit like an echo effect for a while until you get it going. So once we have that accumulator, we know again that that's just the time domain version of what we're looking at. We want to see what does that look like on the inside of the crystal. And you'll have to remember, if you remember from last week, we described what we're really looking at here is a cross section of a 12-dimensional torus or a 12-dimensional donut. And we've unfolded that into these images that you're looking at. In fact, if you would, look down on the right-hand side of the screen, and there's a little donut torus down there.
Uh-oh. It just closed. Hold on a second.
The software closed.
Uh-huh. Okay, it's back. Yeah, it closed.
Okay, so look on the bottom right-hand side. There's a little torus down there.
Uh-huh.
You see that? Double click on that.
I'm not sure exactly what you want me to click on.
Down at the bottom of the screen where it says Sciometrics, the portico.
Yes.
There's a little torus right next to that.
Oh, that's okay. That's what I want.
Yeah, double click
on
that.
Oh, okay. I see that. Mm-hmm.
And then if you use your mouse, you can grab that and turn it and look at whatever edge you want. Or
oh, that's
that
really cool.
And you'll know if you watch that as you speak, you'll see that you're actually populating that as well. And so you'll see all those little pixels there changing as you're speaking into it, because basically what we're doing, if you hit your space bar now and go back to the other screen.
It looks, just for the listeners, it looks to me, though it looks like a donut, it looks to me like how reality, let's see, how do you say this? Like if reality were a pyramid and the frequencies all move, or the, I don't know how to say it, I don't have words for it.
Well,
it all moves to the top and then eventually inverts in infinite, I guess. It looks infinite.
What you're noticing there is one of our big discoveries is that most people see these tori as having a hole in the center, like a donut, and they basically don't. They have a singularity in the center.
Uh-huh.
So there's no hole in there, and all of these 12 dimensions go through that little singularity.
That's
so
exactly
basically,
what it looks like,
if you hit your space bar, so you go back to the other screen,
okay,
and then look again at those images over on the left hand side that we've said are the portico, which are these time domain images of what the person's expressing. If I take a pure white light that has all of the frequencies in it, and I shine it through that and use that image as a diffraction screen or a filter, so to speak, and I put a screen on the other side, I can create an image on the other screen. And this has been known for a long time. In fact, one of the people that has worked the most on this is Bill Tiller, whom you know. And he has described this phenomenon of diffraction and shown how you can create a spectral domain image of a time domain object. And the way he shows it is to take a piece of paper and punch a hole in it and then shine a light through it and put a screen behind it. And you would think that the light would just go straight through the hole and make a spot of light on the screen behind, but it doesn't. It makes a series of concentric rings because the hole actually becomes like a lens. And it reads the edge of the hole as well as what's going through the hole. So different shapes make different images. And you can make a fairly decent mandala-looking pattern from only a handful of little holes punched in a piece of paper like that. So you can imagine, if I were to tell you that there are tens of thousands of holes or pixels on each one of those images that you're looking at there, you could imagine how dense that image would be behind. In fact, it's so dense that you can't even really read it and see what's going on. So we had to have a different way of being able to observe that. So instead of having a screen, we have a lens that refocuses that image into a zero-dimensional point and puts it right into that singularity inside of the torus. And then we torsion the torus by just kind of rotating it in and out, and it basically populates all 12 of those surfaces at the same time. And then when we unfold that with another algorithm, we wind up with those other three images that you're seeing to the right now that we call matrices. And those are basically unfolded, two-dimensional, flat versions of a cross-section of a 12-dimensional torus.
Okay, we are 20 after, and we still got a long way to go, and we still got to talk about what each one of these sections mean and what we can do with it. So
okay.
Keep that in mind. So we're now on which one?
So I think we're actually pretty complete at this point, because We call those last three images, we call those matrices. There's three of them that you see there. One is the real one, the other one is the imaginary one, and the third one in the middle is the complex, which is the marriage between the two. And
because people can't see this.
Yes.
While they're on the radio.
It looks like to you.
I want them to get clear what real, imaginary, and complex means.
Okay.
Because I can see it, and I can see how it changes when I wear the headset and I breathe into it, but they can't see it.
Right. So very quickly, we know now from all the other people you've had on your show, of all the scientists, they know that the most primary level of reality, as they see it, is this complex wave function that gets collapsed into some reality whenever it's observed. Pretty much everybody's up on that, right?
So what you mean by that is if the people were looking at a television and there's no picture on it, it's just a bunch of white noise. So that's where you're at right now, right? Do I understand correctly?
Well, yeah, we're just talking about how...
looking at these screens.
Yeah, what's happening when we're looking at these screens. So we know that the wave, when it comes out of their mouth, when they express something with their breath or their voice, we know that that makes a wave, a sound wave. And we know that that wave can be broken down into these real and imaginary components. This isn't, you know, magic or something that we've dreamed up. This is something that every engineer knows about from school, about these real and imaginary components. And they basically they call them temporal and spectral. So they would say that with regards to a piece of music or sound coming from an instrument, they would say that there's a spectral part that's coming from the instrument, but there's a temporal part that's coming from the player, how the string gets bent or how the piano keys get struck or how the bow draws on the string. Those are all things that are added over time in the temporal domain by the player. So this is really all we're talking about, are these two different components of sound, what's coming from the player and what's coming from the instrument, and how those get combined together to make music or to make something productive from a machine. So basically, the whole concept behind the portico is to help a person learn to integrate those two different aspects of themselves. And we know from every other observation about such things that when there's better integration between a player and an instrument, more beautiful music comes out. Or when there's better integration between an operator and a machine, there's higher productivity and it doesn't break down as much. And we know when there's better integration between a driver and a vehicle that there's less accidents, or they can win the race or whatever. So we know from all those observations that all suffering stems from the difference between these two aspects of ourselves.
So
and the portico really just gives them an opportunity to resolve that and balance that out a little bit better.
When we look at this thing, and I'm asking a question here, I'm not stating it, but when we look at this thing, it's telling us basically how much in cohesion we are.
Yes, if you actually sit and you speak gibberish into it or you speak negative things into it, you'll see that the patterns disassemble. Or they get edgy or not beautiful, whereas if you speak beautiful things into it, you see butterflies and geometric sacred geometries and all kinds of other more beautiful harmonic things. So even without looking at any of the numbers going on, you can just observe that image and you can tell immediately, am I being harmonic about what I'm talking about? Am I feeling connected to it? Am I feeling part of it? Am I feeling... it's what I'm talking about really helping me or hurting me. You can see all that just from looking at these images.
Okay, so where do you want to move next?
So basically to finish up that whole concept, we call these three things the real, imaginary, and complex matrices. We call those the spectral essence of the person. I can't prove it, but I'm pretty sure if there are beings on the other side, that they see things over here more like that than they do as material, physical things. They see what kind of spectra do they project.
That's a very interesting perspective there.
So that's basically the main set of tools there. The whole row beneath, as you see, is black and white. And there's a duplicate of each one of those images down below that is black and white instead of color. And basically what those are indicating is that if you look at the top ones that are colors, you can see that there's a red and blue and green and a lot of other colors involved in there. And the red is representing what's physical, tangible, material things. The green is mental, emotional kinds of things, and the blue are spiritual kinds of things. But those are all energies that the person has in play. You can also see in there, there's a lot of white going on. But everywhere that it's white in there is a place where the red and the green and the blue have balanced themselves out, and they become white instead of colored. So everywhere that it's white that you see in those top images is basically a place where the energy is harmonized and it doesn't need any further ordering. So what we've done in that row below is we've just taken the color out. So you see what's up above, but you see it without any of the energy that's in play. So you only see the energies that are already in harmony.
Right,
and it's kind of interesting to me that would seem like that would be more beautiful. They don't seem as beautiful to me when I look at them as the colored ones do. But the color ones really have in them more of what's not right in you rather than what's not balanced in you rather than what is balanced in you.
Oh, that's really interesting.
So we give all six of those, we give them, or actually all 10 of those, we give them colored and black and white, so you're able to spend a little bit of time looking at the parts of you that need some more ordering as opposed to the parts of yourself that have already harmonized themselves.
So what?
And that's pretty much it. Other than the little numbers that you see running in real time on the bottom, that's pretty much all a person needs to know about the portico, or is that there are these images that you watch, and at the same time, you hear an auditory feedback of that same thing coming back to you. So it's auditory and visual. And it basically just gives a person an opportunity to start resolving the difference between these aspects, these two different aspects of themselves.
So talk to us about what all of, there are a lot of numbers on here and a lot of colors and a lot of musical notes. Tell us about those things. Tell us about the whole real display down there.
Sure. The before we had this program, just a year ago, or even less than a year ago, it took a world-class supercomputer to run this program. And people would actually have to go to an on-site location. They would have to give a stated intention, which was just a one-shot, one-time stated intention, and a recording would be made of that. We would send it over the Internet, process it on our supercomputer, send it back over the Internet, and then I would interpret what I thought was happening from the results that came back. I would interpret that for a person. Now we're like quantum leaps ahead of that because we're working on modern laptop computers. A person doesn't have to go anywhere. They can do it whenever, wherever they want, for as long as they want, in the comfort of their own surroundings without having to go anywhere, use the Internet, or any of those kinds of things. So for us, the technology has taken a quantum leap. And in the beginning, we didn't have these numbers on here. When we first released the portico back in December, we didn't have these numbers on there because the supercomputer that we used to model things with suggested that when you give a person numbers, it basically gives them the opportunity, if they lean that way, it gives them the opportunity to go into analysis paralysis. So they become more interested in analyzing what's going on rather than experiencing what's going on. And for years we've been, we've just come more and more and more to the conclusion that our job is really to help a person learn how to experience life more. It's not wrong to analyze life, but we find that particularly Westerners spend most of their time, probably 95% of their time, in the analyze mode. And you miss a lot of life that way. I remember when I was showing some pictures that I'd taken on a vacation to a friend. I had to ask my wife, where was this picture? Because I was so busy setting the camera up that I wasn't even there. I didn't even remember being there. So a lot of what we do is about intuition and experience and that sort of thing rather than analyzing. But to answer your question, as people are, they want to know about themselves. They just have to have that kind of information. So we were more or less not forced into it, but we kind of gave in to a lot of requests, and we decided to put these monitors, indicators back on, which is what you're seeing at the bottom right-hand corner down there. And basically, just to go through those really fast, the first three one there you can see are our typical red, green, and blue designations there, and they're listed in real, imaginary, and complex. So those numbers that are running in real time are telling you what the relationship is between these real and imaginary partials.
What would the optimum be?
Well, that would be depending on what you're doing and what you're expressing into it. Because you can use it to disassemble yourself just as easily as you can use it to assemble yourself. So
tell us what you mean by both of those statements.
Well, transformation has this process that it goes through. We can see that when we make our water that I told you about and just note all the different things that it has to go through. First, there is an acknowledgement of the need to change. Without that, nothing ever happens. But after that, all this resist, you know, all this problems come up, and you have to give up a resistance to the change. And once you give up the resistance to the change, you have to remove all the unwholesome things that are in the way of making the change. And then once you've got that done, you have to be willing to step out on faith to the new higher level. So there's this process of going through all of that. And part of that process is a disassembly, because to rearrange everything into a higher level of order, you have to take it apart, just like you would a Lego house or anything like that. You have to disassemble it. So the portico, even though we usually use it for assembly purposes, you can't get to the next assembly without disassembling. So it can be used for a number of different purposes, and depending on what the intention of the moment would be how you would want to read this. But quickly, just to give you your own personal hint about how to do this, if you look at the fourth line or the fifth line down where it says cumulus, you can actually see the combined natures of all of that kind of going on together. And then if you follow that all the way to the right-hand side where you're under the complex column, but also in the cumulus row, that number right there, that white number that's saying plus or minus something, that number alone will tell you pretty much what's going on, because if it's a minus number, it means that you are in the imaginary. If it's a plus number, it means you're in the real. So if it was saying plus 20 now, it'd mean you were 20% more real than you
13.
Are imaginary. So if you're plus 13,
it means
you're
13.
It's minus 13. You're 13% more imaginary right now as we're talking than you are real.
What does that mean?
That means you're moving it more into the potential of what we're talking about here, and you're probably thinking of the next questions you want to ask and all that, and you're into the potential rather than the actual science of what we're talking about and that sort of thing.
Okay.
So then down below that you see a range, which is basically the range of all your frequencies. And we talked about this last week, because you can kind of use that to look at your unit of time perspective and how wide you see the present moment at. And we talked about how a very immature person has a really narrow time limit about the present moment, whereas the more mature a person gets, the more they reach into the past and the future for decisions that they're making in the present. And you can kind of see that with this range, but it's a little bit tricky because if
now,
you're...
Which one are we looking at?
The one that says range, the orange one.
Okay, gotcha, okay.
And it's a little bit tricky, though, because if you drop something in the room or make a big loud crash or something like that, you'll suddenly get a big, huge, high frequency out of it, and it will kind of make that number not valid. If
then
that happens,
says,
you just have to, anytime something like that happens, you just go back and hit the zero button, and it will zero everything out, and you can start over again.
Mine says 12 hertz, F sharp, E, and it says 314 hertz. What is
yeah.
that? What does that say?
Well, that would tell you that the accumulated range over the whole period has been about 300, which is what about normal, what I normally see with people unless they're trying to do otherwise. And then that B that you see there is just the music note of that.
Okay.
And down below you can see even more music notes where it says fundamental on the blue line there.
Mm-hmm.
Or the, I guess that's blue-green, looks like to me, line there. It's the, those are the fundamental frequencies. The one in the left-hand column is the current one. So as you're speaking, you'll notice that was kind of jumping around all over the place. And then the one in the right-hand corner is the accumulated one, kind of the average over the time that you've been talking.
Yeah, that's interesting. So what does it tell us?
Well,
I mean, a goal? Is there an optimum goal that we're...
Well, there's not an optimum there. It's more of an indicator of where the energy is. So, like, if what does yours say right now on the orange one? I mean,
on
the blue one.
On the blue, it says it vacillates between F and D. Now it's D, but F and now E flat.
Okay. So what that's telling you is that, and I'm not sure, I put these on here basically to satisfy other people's desire to have the information,
mm-hmm.
and there are a lot of other methods out there that do teach that these music notes have great significance with what's going on in the body. A lot of them will associate them with chakras, for example.
Okay.
So a person might say to you that right now, as you're talking to me right now, that you're mostly in this F and E flat. That's basically the heart chakra. Maybe a little bit of the power chakra below it, a little bit. Maybe just trying to maintain control of a crazy scientist on your radio show. But you could, if you watch that over time, you might be able to see trendings toward different things and then use some of these other methods to get all kind of ideas about what might be going on in different areas of your body or different chakras that you have that are locked down or too open or whatever that might be.
That's actually very interesting if you think about it, when you know you can apply it that way. It's interesting. So what about the next one, manifestation?
The next one down is called manifestation cycle. And we know that... that the manifestation has to go through a number of different a cycle for an intention to manifest itself. So just starting with the for you to affect change on something, to manifest change on something, for example, that has to go through a cycle for where first you think about it, then you express the change or express what you're going to do, and then you take action on that, then you have the manifestation. But that actually goes contrary to the natural flow of things, because normally the natural flow of things starts at origin to where you conceive of something, and then you start putting together all of the parts, you gather and assemble all the parts until you finally have it manifested at one point of the cycle. But then because of the, you want it to become fully integrated and active, so you keep working on it after you even get it manifested until you get it perfected. But then just like everything else, the second law of thermodynamics steps in and entropy steps in and starts taking it apart again. So it basically disassembles things until they're back down to their component parts and reassembles the parts and gets them ready for the next thing that's going to be manifested. So it goes through this flow from conception to manifestation to being fully integrated to being disassembled and then made ready for the next job. But to affect change on that, we have to run contrary to that. So we have to think of what we want to do. We have to express what that is, which basically breaks it down into all of its little component parts. It basically, by expressing what we're going to do, it basically disassembles that intention into all the possibilities, and we gather those up together and get them ready for assembly. And then we start assembling those together, and metamorphosis takes place. And we make it into something different, and we combine all these raw materials together, and finally we get back to manifestation again. So what you're looking at there is basically just images that are numbers that basically show where a person's at in that cycle.
You need to tell us that cycle. You have a pie chart that divided what into four?
Mm-hmm. It would be just like a circle, but it would have a crosshair in it divided into four quadrants. And the natural flow would start at the top at zero phase and work clockwise from conception to manifestation. And then down at the bottom at 180 degrees, it would be fully integrated. And then it would start disassembling, and by 270 degrees over to the left, it would be totally disassembled, and then the parts would be readied for reassembly again back at 360 degrees at the top. But to affect change on that, we have to go contrary.
Let's go through this kind of slowly. If we're looking at it so that people can follow us, if we're looking at the manifestation numbers on here, and the dominant outward radiance number. I think those are important to use if you're trying to manipulate your reality. Am I understanding correctly?
Yes.
Okay. So many times we have all said that we can change our, that we have complete free will and we can do anything that we want. And we go into this, do our meditation or whatever it is that we're doing. And what, if I understand you correctly, that unless you're able to get, and I hate to use it this way, but it's the only way I know how, unless these numbers, the manifestation above 200 and the dominant outward radiance, I forgot where you said that needed to be, then we're really not where we think we are. So we're really not being able to accomplish the things that we thought we were being able to accomplish, so maybe that's why things aren't happening. So these numbers gives us an idea of if we're accomplishing our goals through our meditation or our visualization or intention. Is that right?
Yeah, very simply, the manifestation cycle can allow a person to kind of see just simply, am I going along with the flow or am I affecting change on what I'm doing? Now, I'm not even saying that either one of those is right or wrong or good or bad. I noticed something very interesting a couple of weeks ago when I was doing, when I was actually watching these numbers on a person who was having a healing session from a very famous kind of healer. And they had asked me to come in and actually just read these numbers as they were doing their thing. And so I agreed and I went in and I was watching these numbers and I would notice, whereas normally we like to see people move it into a mode to where they're affecting change on what they're wanting, what they're asking for,
which would be, wait, give us a number. Which is, you're saying you'd like to see them there. What would those numbers be? So
well, the manifestation cycle in that case would be running towards manifestation on both numbers. So,
which would be what numbers?
The ones that are next to the one where it says manifestation.
I mean,
cycle.
I'm looking at it right now.
Right, right,
right.
So what? So what are your numbers there? What's the middle column number?
The pink one.
Yeah.
It 194, 200,
okay.
199,
okay.
201.
Okay, and then what's the one in the right hand column?
It doesn't move very much, 45.
Okay, so what that means is that means in your accumulated one, that's your natural cycle. So that means that you are working towards manifesting whatever you're talking about right now. And you're about halfway there to totally manifesting it because manifestation is at 90 degrees.
Oh, okay.
The other one that's running 190, That's in the action quadrant. So that's actually kind of showing that you're still gathering up, that you don't quite feel like you've got all the things in a row right now and all the things that you need. So you're still gathering up resources to be able to start assembling them together.
Okay.
And so that's how you would read that manifestation cycle. You can just kind of see, am I moving with the flow or am I moving against the flow? And what I noticed with this healer is that every time he put his hands on someone, they would immediately go with the flow. And at first I thought, that's not right. We want to see people taking charge of themselves. But after I thought about it for a minute, I thought, wow, well, if I'd paid $100 to come have a healer put his hands on me, I would probably tend to just let go and let him do his thing.
So what numbers, how do you know go with the flow? What numbers would that be?
Well, that 45 number that you're seeing there, if you were to be going with the flow, you would be watching that number, and that number would be going more back towards zero.
Oh, okay.
Instead of towards 90, which would be manifestation.
Okay. And the dominant outward radiance, what does that tell us?
That basically tells you how much total energy that you have and which way it's going. So what we find is about 99% or more of the human race is our total black holes. We're all walking around, pulling in whatever energy we need to resolve the difference between our real and imaginary selves. And we're just sucking everything in. But every once in a while, you'll find what we call a dominant outward radiator. And these are people who have learned how to turn that around and radiate their energy back out into the field, into their environment. And these are the kind of people who can affect change in their life. They could actually be the kind of people that are sitting in the back of the room not doing anything but controlling everything and not even being the one on stage.
And what numbers... would.
And what we have there is we have a situation where anything above 100% would be dominant outward radiation. And you'll notice as you play around with it, you'll see what brings about dominant outward radiation. A lot of people get dominant outward radiation by getting all up in your face and getting loud. And they're dominantly outward radiating themselves at that point. And you'll notice if you start yelling at it or speaking loudly at it or whatever, you'll notice that you can make that number go up. But the key to dominant outward radiance is learning how to make that number go up without having to get louder. And
so
that's much, much, much more difficult. Because it has to do with a lot of different things. It has to do with, like, articulation. Like, if you let a person speak into here, they talk like this. They talk kind of in a monotone voice and really low like that. You can see how that wouldn't really be indicative of dominant outward radiance. But even if they're not loud, but they're really articulate like this, and they're very passionate about what they're saying, and their frequency range is really wide, and they're really expressing themselves passionately, you'll notice that will also make the number go up. So
if my number says 148, what does that say about me?
That
right
means
now?
Back off, everybody, and get out of your way.
Sorry.
Because that's extreme dominant radiance. And with somebody with a number like that, I would caution them that they're walking around with a bomb. And the bomb is, it's great if you understand this, but here's the thing is that a person with that kind of radiance, everybody would want some of it. So everybody would be hanging around, and they're going to take on whatever energy you are. So as long as you're in a great place, in a good spot, that's going to be wonderful. But if you get in a bad spot, what's going to happen is that everybody you talk to that day or that during that time is going to get that, and they're going
to
They're going
to
go right there with you.
Are you in a bad mood today?
Unless they have somebody else in their life with a higher number in radiance, they have no way of ever getting back out of that until you go back yourself and get them out. So it's a hell of a responsibility to have that much dominant outward radiance because you have to, you know, because most people will come back after that happens. They, those people that have dominant outward radiance, they don't need anybody to get out of a bad mood. So what they do is they go away by themselves. They kind of just exit out for a minute, and they take care of things, and they get themselves back, and then they kind of march back into their life, and they're like, huh, wonder why everybody's in such a bad mood.
Gosh, I can so relate to that.
And what they don't realize is they set it up because they're the radiant part of their little sphere of influence.
Okay.
And it's up to them now. They actually have to go back and undo all that stuff that they did to the other person. So it makes you responsible for them as well as yourself. So
that can be frightening.
It can be.
You
but if you learn, if you learn that, if you learn to watch yourself doing it and to go ahead and pre-isolate yourself on those days when you can't really do anything about your mood and stuff, and you just don't, you just try not to let that out, then you don't have to go back and fix all that later.
I did nothing today. I was inside by myself cooking, but he felt it. And he come in.
Well,
he was outside
yeah.
cutting a tree down, and he come in and just said, "Are you in a bad mood?" And I'm like, "No."
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, it radiates out, especially with that kind of number. It just radiates out like you might as well have a bumper sticker or a neon sign on your face that's flashing out what you're feeling.
Interesting. Okay. Okay, so what about, there are some little words down here, temporal mix, spectral mode, aspiration.
Yeah, no, those are little settings that you can... that you can change different things on how the sound comes back. Those are mostly the sound controls.
Oh, okay.
So the temporal mix is basically allows you to hear one or two of the different things that are going on because there's two different kinds of sound feedback. One of the sound feedbacks is called the spectral mode, and you'll see it next to that down there where it says aspiration or intention. This spectral mode basically looks for whatever frequencies that are in your voice that you are in most need of, and it starts feeding those back to you. And when it's in the aspiration mode, it starts at zero and builds up to that. When it's in intention, it starts with everything that's in your voice, and it starts cutting out things that you have plenty of, until you finally get back to just the things that you're in most need of. So both of those settings eventually get you to the same spot, but they're basically just getting you back to a place of feeding you back frequencies and phases and magnitudes that you're in most need of to balance yourself out. But there's also...
No, go ahead. No, sorry.
Well, there's another thing going on there as well called the temporal transform or the temporal mix. And what that does is it allows you to actually hear what you're saying as you speak into the microphone. If that's when it comes on, that's turned all the way off. And if you speak into it, all you hear are those frequencies being fed back to you that you're in most need of. But if you turn that temporal mix up, you would actually hear what it is you're saying into the microphone. And I kind of like to have a little bit of that because otherwise you get lost when all you hear is the feedback and you can't really hear what you're saying. So I personally like to use a little of the temporal mix. Other people aren't would prefer just to use the spectral mode. So we encourage people to make this their own and use it accordingly. Just play with all the buttons and everything and find settings that work for yourself.
Well, we only have a few more minutes. I had no idea this time had flown by these last 20 minutes. Talk about anything that you think's important. I do want to ask you this one question. Talking about the being able to hear and it talking and reverberating back, does that help push out your intentions into the universe to help you create what it is that you trying to create?
Yeah, in fact, what we're trying to encourage people to do there is what we call deep listening, because most people just listen on the surface. They don't really listen deeply. And if I were to tell you that there's something like 48,000 frequencies in each one of the ears when you're listening to that, and you can only pick out a few in each ear that you're going to listen to, what that tells you is that there's a lot more going on behind the scenes that you're not listening to. So if you can start practicing deep listening so that you can, whatever you habituate to in the beginning, once you habituate it to it, you can actually kind of see that there's some other stuff going on behind that. So you start paying attention to that. And sooner or later, most people will report back that they hear themselves saying things back to themselves in their own voice, which were not things that they actually said.
Wow, that's interesting.
And many, many people report this back to us, little phrases or words or things like that that were things that they did not say. And what we've learned to do is if we say those things back into the computer again or back into the microphone, then it almost starts like a little conversation to where the next thing you hear coming back relates to the first thing. So a little story starts developing. And a lot of people have had amazing epiphanies and ahas. In fact, just to finish up, let's finish up right there, that basically watching these images and listening to these sounds basically falls under a category called, or a phenomenon called apophany. Now, apophany is the experience of seeing a meaningful image or hearing a meaningful sound in an otherwise random image or sound. And so the psychiatrists are all over this. They use those ink block tests. They use symbols. They use all kind of things to get into a person's psyche because they know that these images will bring about certain kinds of deep psychological feelings and thoughts. And so that's basically what we're doing here is we're giving the person the option or the ability to experience apophany. And we know now that those apophanies can lead to epiphanies or aha kind of experience that can radically change a person just in a few seconds, just to have like a real amazing, mind-blowing, mind-opening realization about yourself or about your life or about what you need to do. Or about why something's not working and that sort of thing, those can change people's lives almost immediately. So this is one of the main reasons of or purposes of the protocol is to help a person get into one of those states to where they can have those kind of epiphanies and aha-like experiences.
Well, I think it's an amazing piece of technology. I've never seen anything like it. I think it's wonderful.
And we haven't even discussed the next upgrade coming, which you see it's already put on the screen there at the bottom in the center, all those little spectral lines and everything down there, those
well,
little
that
displays.
Just means you have to come back because we have 2 minutes, that, but that'll let, you have that to lets come
us,
back.
That lets us use the brain to run it, and we can get all kind of data.
When will it be ready?
It's already ready. I'm just so busy I can't really release it until I get some help. So I got to get some help trained on the protocol, and then we can release it.
Oh, man, I'm excited about that.
We're actually doing, we're trying to do work with the Global Consciousness Project and get it into there because if you'll notice right to the left of those little colored displays at the bottom, you see those little zeros there?
Uh-huh.
Does that look familiar to you, that layout?
Like a body?
That's the Tree of Life. That's the Kabbalistic Tree of Life. And when you put this brain band on, those enable, and you can see all of your different sephira and where all the energy is. And one of those is a random number generator like they use in the Global Consciousness Project.
I have one of those lamps in my room here.
Yeah.
I love
it. So it's getting really exciting where we're, you know, where things are going with all of this.
Well, promise me you'll come back.
I certainly will. You,
promise
you just
me.
Let me know when.
Well, whenever you're ready. I mean, all you got to do is tell me. Give me. I'm booking. I think I've got one or two dates in November, December. Not many. So as soon as you know you can do it,
Let's try to pick a December one because I should have some really amazing news by then.
Okay.
We just got back some good news today. Our app is working on mobiles. So,
really?
Yeah, we're just so excited about it. I'm just jumping up and down. So we
all
can
right,
come back and talk about some of our other things that we've discovered, too. We know now why a recording never sounds like the original live presentation, and we can fix it.
Well, don't say it because people are going to have to come back and hear you next time.
Okay, fantastic.
Tell us one more time where to find you before we cut off.
www.theportical.com. Or they might also want to check out www.scifisound, which is psi-fi-sound, scifisound.com. That's our new sound enhancement technology that's really mind-blowing and transformative in its own aspects.
You're the best, Don.
Likewise
I
to you. Thank
to you
so
you
much
back.
For helping everybody get the word out about what's really going on in the world, all the exciting stuff.
Well, thank
makes
you.
It makes
have
you
a good
glad
week.
And excited to wake up in the morning instead of worried and fearful.
Exactly. Thank you, and have a good one. I can't wait to have you back.
My pleasure. And we'll talk again soon. If you have any questions, give me a call, and I'll help you learn how to use this thing.
I'll do it. Thank
all
you,
right.
Dear.
Lots of love.
Good night.
Good night.